For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. My path to self-love. Today, I'm going to share with you my path to self-love. And a real life of an MSW, and the website did not give the person's name, but was a really good quote. Here's what I have learned. Self-love is a state of mind where you appreciate, respect, and honor yourself. It's a state of mind where you do not break promises to yourself, where you are as kind to yourself as you are to others, and where you forgive yourself as easy as you forgive others. Self-love is about being your own best friend, because make no mistake, the most important relationship you will ever have in your life is with yourself. The most important relationship you'll ever have is with yourself. And when I look back on myself in the year 2005, I thought that I wasn't judgmental and that I had mostly positive self-talk. And often in mindful moments or teaching mindfulness, I'll ask people about their self-talk, and most people think theirs is mostly positive. But that was only because all of my thoughts from my inner critic and all my judgments were largely unconscious. It's like your mind is this big iceberg and there's only a little bit that's above the water. The rest is below. And what we're trying to do is move that water level down. I thought that I was okay. But looking back, I can see that I didn't love myself. I was not as kind to myself as I was to others. I didn't forgive myself easily, and I was definitely not my own best friend. My needs, when I had to admit I had them, came in last place. It was about that time that I felt there was a hole in my heart, and I started seeking. I did Bible study, I did contemplative prayer, and then I got into meditation. And that's really where I started my path to self-love. It included learning to meditate, then seeing my mental chatter, which didn't come right away when I learned to meditate, toning down my inner critic, getting comfortable enough with discomfort to sit with my inner wounds, cultivating self-compassion, asking the most important question ever, are you sure? And then based on the answer to that, updating the stories that I've been playing in my head. So starts with learning to meditate and having a regular meditation practice. When I first started meditating, I was either going 100 miles an hour or fast asleep. So I had to slow myself down because there was so much whirling up in my head that I couldn't see. And once I slowed it down a little, I began to see that I had some wounds from my childhood that I had kept buried pretty deep. I didn't even realize those stories were still playing in my mind until I'd been meditating for a couple of years, because there was just so much chaos going in my mind and I kept myself so busy, I didn't see anything. And when I learned to slow down my mental chatter, I was able to see more of the stories I was playing over and over in my mind. You know, 90% of the thoughts in our mind are repeats. And those ones that are under the water in our iceberg, we don't even know are shaping our lives. But I finally realized that I had a very strong inner critic. And so I really needed to tone down my inner critic. A healthy inner critic helps you recognize where you've gone wrong and what you need to do to set things right. We don't want to get rid of that. But for me, as for many of us, my inner critic kind of went overboard, throwing dart after dart of scolding, shaming, nitpicking, and fault-finding. Anyone experience that? No wonder I felt that there was something wrong with me. I actually encourage my inner critic. I strengthen those neural pathways by holding myself to a high standard of perfection. When I failed to meet that impossible standard, I heard the same words repeatedly. I'm not good enough. That voice came from the voice of my father, who would say when I got all A's and one B, "What's that B doing there?" And what I heard from him is, "You're not good enough." Ouch. I've been telling myself that for years and years. Sharon Salzberg says, while still under the tyranny of the critic, we believe that self-love depends on a constant striving success and the love and admiration of others. And since I believed I was not good enough, I wasted a lot of time trying to prove myself to the world. I became a know-it-all and a do-it-all as I hungered for approval from others so that I could feel better about myself. And for many years, I unconsciously listened to the mantra, "You're not good enough," believing it and allowing it to shape my life. Like each of you, I had incorrect stories playing out in my head for much of my life. I thought I had to know everything and do everything in order to be enough. I thought that having needs was bad and that I had to take care of myself without help from others. I thought that I had to brush any unpleasant feelings under the carpet or it would overwhelm me. And my story said, don't get too close to friends. If they see the true you, they'll reject you. So all of these wounds from childhood, they're little ones, but they impact your life and they shape who you are. And Sharon Salzberg says, to truly love ourselves, we must challenge our beliefs that we need to be different or inherently better in order to be worthy of love. I always thought I had to be better to be worthy of love. But by practicing looking deeply and asking the question Thich Nhat Hanh suggests, are you sure? I found that many of my stories really were untrue. And those false stories definitely didn't serve me. They made me more rigid, inflexible, sometimes clingy, and at times closed off. The stories limited who I was, and they limited what I could experience because I had this brick wall up in front of me. And I've been practicing letting go of those stories, but when I'm feeling particularly stressed, they come popping right back up. And then I have to begin again. So I haven't made my inner critic go away. That's probably not a possible, but I have reduced the power that it holds over me. I'm on the verge of not believing that my failures are who I really am. I'm learning to simply acknowledge my critic and say, oh yes, there's that story again. And as soon as I do, the judging thought loses some power. And I can decide whether I want to listen to the story, whether I want to believe the story, whether I want to act on the story, or whether I want to just ignore it. And I found that when I don't listen to my critic, disaster doesn't necessarily strike. I've been listening to my critic because if I felt like if I didn't, something terrible could happen. And that really wasn't true. And so that's given me more courage to listen to my inner wisdom. We all have this inner goodness, inner wisdom. And we don't always listen to it because our critic is so loud and telling us what to do that's different than what we know is really the right thing to do. Sharon Salzberg again says, when you recognize and reflect on even one good thing about yourself, you're building a bridge to a place of kindness and caring. So I had been creating unhelpful neural pathways for years. So it's going to take practice to strengthen the helpful ones while letting the unhelpful ones atrophy. And when I take the time to feel how good it feels to release my inner critic's hold on me, it gives me the strength to release its grip again and again. because this isn't a one and done. This is a life practice. And so besides toning down my inner critic, I had to look deeply at my wounds. Everyone has some wounds from childhood, and I grew up with a mother who brushed anything unpleasant under the carpet, and so that's what I learned to do. And I never dealt with any negative issues. But over the 2 years of my meditation teacher training, I learned, or maybe I should say I was forced to, look at my wounds. Thich Nhat Hanh says to hold your wounds like you would hold a crying baby. And when I heard him say that, I thought, okay, you hold it for a little bit and it stops crying, right? No, for me, holding him was more like holding a colicky baby that's never going to stop crying. Just goes on and on and on. And so I had a friend at the teacher training who would encourage me by just saying, can you be with it just for a minute? Just for this breath, be with it. And I was trying to do so, to be with the negative, uncomfortable feelings inside of me. And I developed this visual that worked for me, and I feel a little uncomfortable sharing with you, but I think it might help. I visualized that there were wounds in my heart and that I had them covered with gauze to protect me. And it was a lot of gauze. I mean, it went from here to here. And when I would sit with them, I would just open up the gauze and let the air get at it. My dad was a doctor, and whenever we got hurt, we did not get a Band-Aid unless you're bleeding, because you let the air get at it, the wounds heal faster, according to him. And so I use that analogy that I'm just going to open it up and let the air get at it for a little bit so it will heal. I didn't try to figure out what to do with it. I just sat with it and let it be there and took that gauze off for as long as I could. And then I put the gauze back on and distract, you know, go to back to my breath and not think about the wound. And over time, the gauze in my visualization got smaller and smaller, and the amount of time I could have that gauze opened up just sitting with these uncomfortable feelings got longer and longer. And today I don't even have a Band-Aid on them. The wounds are still there, but they're not so raw anymore. And I'm strong enough to be with them that I can just let them be there. And so that helped looking at my wounds. But in order to do that, I really needed to develop some self-compassion. And that would help also in cultivating loving kindness. My meditation group called Snowflower, often we do a practice called loving kindness. And I really struggled with it. I can do loving kindness for loved ones and neutral people. Doing loving kindness for difficult people is a piece of cake for me. But doing loving kindness for myself, it took me a couple of years. It just felt inauthentic, and so I just skipped over it and didn't do it. Sharon Salzberg says, but when we come from a place of inner impoverishment, love becomes merely hunger. Hunger for reassurance, for acclaim, for affirmation of our being. And I was in a place of hunger, I think. Around the same time as I was studying to be more self-compassionate, I took the class with Kristen Neff and Chris Germer, which I highly recommend. And that was learning just to treat myself like I would a good friend. And so I was learning that, and at my teacher training, Tara Brach would put her hand on her heart and say, it's okay, sweetheart. And I'd be like, I'm never going to be able to do that. No way. But I did always put my hand on my heart, and I found it really is a calming influence. So I continued to try and practice loving kindness for myself. The traditional phrases that Buddhists use just didn't work for me. So I started gathering phrases, and the words felt a little bit more authentic. And then at the same time, I started repeating a daily mantra. I am enough. I am worthy. My needs matter. And I'm perfectly imperfect. And I did that probably for 2 years in COVID every day. Just spent time with that mantra. Because the more you talk to yourself, the more you believe it. And rather than telling myself the things my inner critic was saying, you're not good enough, I decided to change my self-talk. And so at first it felt a little funny, but over time, as I kept saying it, and actually the last two got added on later, I started with, I am enough, I am worthy. And then after I did that for a while, I thought, yeah, my needs matter. So I started saying that. And then after a while of that, I thought, yes, I am perfectly imperfect, and that's okay. Kristin Neff says that's why you need self-compassion, because you are imperfect. So recently I surprised myself because something happened, and I heard myself in my head say, it's okay, sweetie pie. Sweetie pie is what I called all my kids. And it was just like, oh, okay. And most of the time now, I can send myself well wishes. I can send myself loving kindness phrases and not just say the words to send it, but actually send the feeling. But there are still days when the love is blocked and I just can't do it. And that's because it's a lifelong practice. Some days it works and some days it doesn't. And so after really working with that, you know, toning down my inner critic, looking deeply at my wounds, cultivating both self-compassion and loving kindness, I was finally able to start updating my stories. At a recent retreat, I had a breakthrough. I was feeling very judgmental about everything. On Friday night, I was finding fault with everything. Saturday morning, finding fault with everything. And Saturday afternoon, at a small group discussion, a friend said, I wonder what's underneath all that judgment. And I responded, I guess it wouldn't kill me to look deeply. And so for the rest of the sits, I sat with feeling judgmental. I didn't say, why is this happening? I just sat with, I'm feeling judgmental. And then on the first sit on Sunday morning, I was sitting with it, and into my head popped my father's voice. What's that bee doing there? And I always thought he said that because he thought I was not enough. And here I am just sitting with, what's that bee doing there, not trying to change anything. And all of a sudden, I thought, oh, maybe it wasn't that he thought I wasn't enough. Maybe that was just his unskillful way of trying to motivate me. And for years, my sisters have been telling me that I was his favorite. Well, if I wasn't enough, how would I be his favorite out of the 10 kids? He's not around to ask, but I know that that story is probably not true, that he was saying you're not enough. He was trying to motivate me. And changing that just took this big weight off my shoulders. And all this joy bubbled up inside of me. That as I was walking to breakfast, if I wasn't worried about hurting my shoulder, I would have been doing cartwheels. It really felt good. Now, did that last forever? No. But it started the ball rolling. Now I've been looking and sitting with different little wounds in my childhood and seeing the story I told myself and envisioning what other stories might be. And it's amazing when you really look at it that the stories that I told myself are so patently false or incorrect. They were all about you're bad, when necessarily that really wasn't the case. You know, when you're 6 years old, you're not really bad, but things happen. And sometimes it's the adults around you that really were more at fault than you were. So that's allowed me to start removing all those bricks in that wall I had to keep me safe. And when I did that, that allows me to let more love in and to feel the love for myself as well as the love for other people. And I guess the key thing that I learned through this, and another Sharon Salzberg quote, is When we don't tell those we love about what's really going on or listen carefully to what they have to say, we tend to fill in the blank with stories. And I found that I have filled in a lot of blanks with stories that may not be true and that kept me from feeling good about myself. And so you really want to keep practicing with this. My practice is not done. There's times when love is blocked. But when that happens, I know I can begin again and again and again and again. I can ask myself, are you sure? And I can update my stories to be more empowering. You know, if you're telling yourself a story, whether it's true or not, your brain doesn't know. It thinks it is. But if you change your story to be more empowering, whether or not it's true doesn't matter if it makes it better. I mean, we don't want to lie to ourselves intentionally, but we don't always want to look at the negative side. There's probably a more positive version of that story that's equally true to the one you've been telling yourself. I can remember I don't have to know and do everything to be enough, that even being imperfectly imperfect, that I am enough. And that allows me to live more authentically, looking inside myself for love rather than looking outside for approval. I don't have to strive to be who I think people want me to be, and I can use that energy to be the best me that I can be. Sharon Salzberg says, when we contort ourselves, doggedly trying to find some way to become okay, our capacity to love shrinks, and our attempts to improve ourselves fill the space that could be filled with love. And to me, that was really important. How do I want to fill the space? With love or with attempts at self-improvement and proving myself to the world? So with that, I invite you to share any thoughts or comments that came up.